Blog Talk Radio.
The words we speak translate into feelings that express belief systems at the conscious and subconscious level. And what we speak is what we attract towards us.
We really aren't using our minds for the most positive results in our life.
Do you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make about
this today? Well, it's tied to the tie-in with what the lady was just saying, as far as the way the children are raised and the environment that they live in.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm in a recovery program now, and it teaches us that we have a philosophy here that we are all born with potential and we are not victims of circumstance. And I believe that everybody has the will to change. You can't blame the way you were raised for things you do in life. You have to get, you have to be able to decide right from wrong at one point in time.
You are listening to In the Spirit on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Shirley, also known as Tafwe. Tafwe means to appreciate God and to glorify God. Let's glorify God today on this episode of In the Spirit.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for tuning into the show today. I am so excited today to introduce my special guest to you, Reverend Kevin Ross. The format for the show today will be a discussion around the steps to take to redesign your life, how you can go about implementing the necessary changes, either behaviorally or spiritually, to begin your experience. As I said, my guest today is Reverend Kevin Ross, affectionately known to his friend as Rev Kev. He is from the South Side of Chicago, and his contributions as an author, inspirational speaker, a peak performance coach, he's also a mentor, he's a youth activist, a humanitarian, and an ordained minister. Kevin's background includes earning a Bachelor's of Arts degree from Morehouse College. He's a Morehouse man, y'all. Yay! He has continued his studies at the Johnny Coleman Institute in Chicago. He is also the founder and president of the Designer Life Institute, which trains individuals, entrepreneurs, corporate leaders, and others how to accelerate the achievement of their personal, professional, financial, and spiritual goals. Sometimes he's often mistaken for the comedian Chris Rock. He uses his charisma and humor to enlighten and empower diverse audiences and clientele to live lives of excellent purpose and contribution. And thank you so much, Reverend Kent, for being my first guest on the redesign of In the Spirit. How are you today?
I'm fantastic, Shirley. Thanks so much for inviting me to join you and your listeners.
Thank you so much for accepting the invitation, and I am so, so honored to have you on the show today. And we will also be joined in a few minutes by my co-host, Sandra Wadsworth-Bouton, and she's the wife of Reverend William D. Burton, who is also a motivational trainer. He's a singer-songwriter from San Francisco, California. And he knows some of the same people that you know, in this journey to life, like Les Brown and some of the other people. And I'm sure he can talk more about that when they join us.
Okay.
So, let me ask you the question that you've been asking many of the guests on your show, and that is to give us, from your perspective, the significance of this moment in history.
Well, I think this moment in history, and as I've been looking at it, it's an opportunity for a whole new consciousness to be birthed, a consciousness of inclusion, a consciousness of diversity, a consciousness of that builds off of young energy that is leading the way, a cutting-edge consciousness that would permit for us to elect the first African-American president of the United States of America. it's significant in many ways because America is saying that we see another way of transforming our world, and it does not have to look like it has for the last 244 years in this country. We see, we're beginning to see the emergence of King's dream that all men and women are created equally.
Mm-hmm.
And as we see this, we come to know that this wave that's taking place in our country is the direct result of an expansion of our consciousness. So I think it's very significant because this marks many more possibilities and breakthroughs for our nation. Our country has come out of its adolescence.
Absolutely, and so very well said. And you're right, it is definitely another way of transforming the world.
Yes.
And one of the things that you do as a motivational coach is to help people to transform their lives. And I have Reverend Burton and Sandra Bouton on the line as well. Welcome to In the Spirit today.
Thank you so much. I'm just honored to be here. And I just heard a few seconds of the Reverend there, and he was just magnificent. I heard a few excerpts before, he was just magnificent, and thank you so much for having us on the same show.
Yes, we're very happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us, and he was just giving his perspective on the significance of this moment in history with us having an African-American president leading this country.
Yes, it is phenomenal.
I'm excited.
Thank you. And Reverend Kev, now you're on a mission to reach out and personally touch and minister to 100,000 people by the end of this year as part of your Design to Shine 2009 tour?
Yes, and I have been doing that in so many different ways. I was touched after learning that a friend of mine, her fiancé, killed himself, a young man who had been a restaurant owner, and due to the economy and the mounting debt that he was in, he found no other way out, and so he killed himself. And of course it transformed the life of his fiance, and it devastated his children, and just the ripple effect that took place after that. And so what I came to realize is that people who make these choices don't know what I know. I mean, they're evidently, he didn't know who he really was and what the next step to take would be, and what his true source of power lies. You see, it was about the economy of his soul and not the outer economy. And so I made the declaration that I was going to personally make it my business to touch the lives of 100,000 people by any means necessary this year. And so I've been touring the country and receiving invitations and going about making sure that I can look in people's brown, blue, black, green eyes and let them know that they were designed to shine. And of course, it's not just that simple, that those words, but in my messages and in my one-on-one time with them, I let them know that so that people began to live from the inside out rather than the outside in.
Yes, the words are not simple, but they're powerful. And people need that any way that they can get it.
Yes.
And I am so honored to be one of the 100,000 that you reached out to, and as well as being a part of the Design to Shine in 2009 tour.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm glad you have me here. It takes one. This takes one. Have the right idea, and with that right idea, one can touch many.
Excuse me, Shirley. I'd like to say to Rev Kev that just this morning when I was listening to your excerpts that Shirley played for me this morning, just the statement of you saying we must learn to say yes to ourselves just opened a new window in my mind. I was working on that. However, you know, to have other people state things clearly to you at a different time means a great deal to many other people. So it sort of opened my mind this morning that yes, that is correct. I've been taught no, no, no from one, so I've got to simply erase that by putting that yes in and letting myself know that I do deserve everything that I desire. I appreciate that, and thank you for that message.
Sure, absolutely. It's extremely important to give yourself permission to receive all that's trying to flow in and through you and express from you. And the world, of course, the society and the social constructs that we live within are constantly bombarding us with messages that we're not enough, we're not deserving, we're unworthy. Even the man that wrote the song Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound That Saved a Wretch Like Me, well, this man is a former slave owner and got away with it. And so because of that, you know, it was amazing grace. And he felt like a wretch for the things that he had done, but that does not include everybody else, you know. He did that. So, but we sang his song about himself. That doesn't mean that's the truth about you and me and everyone else, you see. But
absolutely.
It's just what we are allowing to be our spiritual and mental diet. But yes, we must give ourselves permission to experience what we feel is the highest and best for us. And what we're seeking is always trying to find us. It's seeking us. It's coming our way. And the erroneous beliefs that we operate from often serve as barriers and blocks to having the life that we desire and deserve. And we often end up looking at people across the street, the Joneses and others, admiring them and wondering why we don't have. We under-have because we under-ask. We under-receive because we under-deserve. That's what it is.
Reverend Kev, you know, to hear you talk about that hymn, I was a Pentecostal minister at 5 years old, and I have never been comfortable with that song, you know, even when I didn't have new thought as a concept, you know, I never was comfortable with that song. And then as I grew up and started to investigate spirituality on my own and encounter people like Dr. Johnny Coleman, I hear you've been associated with, and Mr. Les Brown and I have, you know, have been associated together. And Mr. Jack Canfield actually put me on stage once at one of his situations. When I started to move from that religious attitude to the spiritual, living from the outside in, as you so aptly put it, I realized that all of the questions that I've been asking in the Pentecostal movement, I started to find some answers for those over on the other side of the light.
Yeah, and you see, because you had an opportunity, your spirit was informing you that this was not the truth of you. When you heard that song, you had dissonance with it rather than resonance with it, okay?
Exactly.
Resonance and dissonance. And that dissonance is, that was letting you know that this is not who you are. This is not your song to sing. This is not for you. And often we ignore what the scriptures talk about as the still small voice within us. However you wish to describe it, we often ignore our internal guidance system because what appears to be popular and more significant outside of us is dominating us. And so we suppress the true essence of our being. We suppress it, we ignore it, we reject it, until one day we get sick and tired of being sick and tired, as Fannie Lou Hamer said, and we stand up and take action, usually in some radical way. But it could simply be, as it was put earlier, just saying yes to yourself or saying no, that's not for me. And then moving in the direction of your desire.
You know, the words that you speak are very powerful anyway. They're spiritual containers, and even stuff that you listen to. And if it's not reinforcing or helping you to grow in the direction that you should, then you go in an opposite direction of what spirit inside of you wants.
Absolutely.
And Brother Kev, I'm sure that you'll agree, one of the things that it takes, and I can speak for myself, to make that transition, to step outside of the box, is courage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is having confidence in oneself, having confidence in the guidance that you're receiving. Courage is often simply going in the opposite direction of the societal drift. You know, it simply is that. It's often doing that, just simply going in another direction. You know, breaking through the inertia that is around you. Courage in our society is often being yourself out loud. Simply being yourself. Because as I mentioned earlier, society has trained us. If you turn on any commercial, it's going to tell you what kind of car you need to drive and tell you that the car you're driving now is not enough. It's going to tell you what kind of clothes to wear, because the kind of clothes you already own are not enough. It's going to tell you what foods to eat and the best restaurants to go to, because the ones that you're going to are not enough. It's going to tell you what body shape to have, because the body shape that you have is not enough. It's going to tell you what tanning salon to go to, because the color of your skin is not dark enough or not bright enough or whatever it is. So by the time television and society finishes with you, you're left with this emptiness. And so courage is simply being yourself, breaking through from the mental and emotional shackles that are subliminally imposed upon us every day.
I'm laughing when you use that word, because I was just thinking, I wrote a piece of poetry a while back, and I actually used that word. I called the TV the subliminal criminal.
Mm, yeah.
You used that word, and yeah. It was like, yes.
Yeah.
And that's a phenomenal piece that you wrote, too. I really like that. But that's the concept of thinking outside the box.
That's right.
Going against societal dictates for your life. The word tells us not to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Mm-hmm. And now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead and close your thought.
No, transforming, renewing one's mind is perhaps the most difficult thing to do, because we've assigned so much of our attention away from that sweet voice of truth that's within us, and we've become conformers rather than transformers. And so we conform to what our mother feels is best for us and take on the career that our mother says, you know, you're going to be a lawyer because it's prestigious, it pays a lot of money, and it'll bring honor to the family name. And yet you know that's not what you want to do. In fact, I spend a lot of my time in my coaching practice helping people get on track, get back on track, unliving someone else's design for them.
I like
are you a conformer or a transformer? Where do you fall within the equation? So that scripture can actually mean something other than something that we can quickly parrot when someone starts, "Be you not," and then everybody finishes it up, you know. But the real work is taking that in making a decision to change your mind.
So what would you say to a person who has all that information to transform their lives but doesn't implement the steps necessary to make the changes?
Is the life that you have now working for you? See, if it's working, then don't change your mind. If everything is working out just fine for you, don't change your mind. But if it's not working, then it means that the information that you have is uselessly lying dormant, you know, and that information needs to be resurrected within you. It needs to be brought alive and made practical use of. So a lot of us are on this planet taking up air, oxygen, space, and information that some more purposeful person could be using. You know, and I don't think that all of that good resource should be wasted on someone who's unwilling to try his or her hand at being what they were created to be. Because you really and truly shortchange the creator of something that it was trying to manifest into this world each time you choose not to represent your gift to the world.
And be all that you can be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, and that could be for whatever reason, but fear, whatever stumbling block has that person stagnating in life, what would it take then for them to become alive? You said they need to be made alive. Fear has them bound, but a small part of them is hopeful. So what would it take to get that person to move beyond that fear?
You know, it could take a multitude of things. I don't want to be simplistic about it. But I will say this. It's a decision. It's a decision. At some point, we come to the place where I decide that enough is enough. I decide, if you're in a, for the person who's listening, and you might be in an abusive relationship, and, you know, you've gone through that cycle of abuse over and over again, a day comes in your life when you can't hide the scars anymore. And you have to say, enough is enough. For that person who is going to the job every day that you can't stand, you can't stand it. No one likes you there. You don't like anybody there yourself because you can't stand it. It's not you. You come to a place where you must decide enough is enough. If you're in a marriage that's not working, and you want it to be transformed, you know, you can't take another day of the quiet desperation. You have to come to the place of decision. Nothing moves until a decision is made. And that decision is around a commitment to be more, to do more, and to have more. You actually decide, and then something shifts within you, and then you make a commitment that I will and I shall have my dreams. I will and I shall begin to live the best life possible for me. I know that there's more in this world for me to give and to receive and to experience, and I'm committed to devoting the rest of my life in pursuit of that.
And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier with the courage. It takes courage. So you have to let go of the fear.
You can even operate with the fear. I don't want to give anybody an advanced class right now. You know, letting go of fear may be too advanced for some folks. You can operate with the fear. You know, Les Brown says, feel the fear and do it anyway. You can actually operate with fear. You can transmute fear. You can stand on the diving board and be paralyzed and still choose to jump. And it is taking action in spite of the fear that you feel, taking action anyway in spite of the action that you feel, that will allow you to become durable enough so that fear begins to diminish its capacity and power over you. I'm not asking anybody to do anything radical like let go of fear. I'm saying if it's present, operate in spite of it. And you can. You can.
When you take that first step forward, that's encouraging and that's hopeful, and that'll encourage you to continue on that journey. I was reading a book recently called Who Moved My Cheese? And that's precisely what that book talks about. It's, life is about change and transformation. And you don't fulfill the purpose that was put inside of you.
Yes.
Yeah, Shirley, you know, when you were talking about who moved my cheese, I work as a consultant at the ESC, Employment Securities Commission, and one of the challenges there is to get groups of people who have been wage slave earners all of their lives to think in terms of entrepreneurship, or think in terms of really stepping outside of that box and doing something in a different way. I've run into groups and groups of people who keep trying the same thing that got them to where they are in this dissatisfied situation, they keep attempting the same thing and expecting a different result over and over and over. And although they can classically tell you that that's insanity, they are locked into it, and you see fear in their eyes when you say, try something new.
Reverend Kevin, I was listening to one of your broadcasts a little while ago, and I heard you ask a question to the audience. What do you say to yourself when no one is around? Now, this is the same as the self-talk that we have within us. And how does a person change those thoughts? How would they go about changing that self-talk?
Well, you've got to have some new information. You know, you've got to be introduced to something other than what you have been stewing in, you know. So I encourage people, if you want to really change your self-talk, introduce new information, read some new books, attend a workshop or a seminar, surround yourself with positive people who are providing you with some higher content in terms of their conversation. You know, spend some time in nature. Do something that will counteract the voices that's in your head. Prove those voices wrong. But you have to, you know, there's a computer statement, garbage in, garbage out. You know, and if all that is your mental and emotional diet are the old scripts that you were raised on by people who are also fearful, who hadn't gone beyond a certain level, then yes, when you're alone in your thoughts, that's what's going to play automatically. So I suggest to people to, you know, reach higher on the tree, get out there on the skinny branch and grab the low-hanging fruit that has the high-octane, you know, fuel that you need to transform your mind.
Well, I agree totally, and I think that is the only way that we can at least seemingly reach for our desires and goals, because as I stated to Shirley some time ago, doing this show with her was a step for me as far as reaching that fruit on that thin branch, because I had evidently told myself that this was something that I could not or should not do, and I had said no to it so many times until when the opportunity came this time, I was compelled and I followed my guidance and I said, yes, let's do this. I mean, it's time for me to step outside of the box. I felt it, so I followed it, and here we are today, and I'm having this marvelous conversation with you, which would not have happened. And Shirley and my husband and all of us are sharing this beautiful energy today together. It's just miraculous to me, and I am honored, as I said before, to be in this energy at the right time, at the right place.
That's right. That's right. There's a game that children used to play growing up. It was called, you would write chalk marks on the ground, okay? You were told, it was like a jail. You'd stand inside this square that was chalk marks that were simply on the ground, and you were not to come out of those chalk marks until someone tagged you out or told you it was okay. And the kids might not get you at all. You know, you may just be standing there forever. Our religious beliefs have served to keep us in prison. Our political views have served to keep us in prison. The ideas of our parentage and our history has kept us bound in chalk marks. And there's a world outside of the narrow confines of neatly packaged belief systems. And when we step outside of that, we begin to experience the benefit of both worlds, the best of both worlds, the best of what the world that I was reared in had to offer me, plus what the rest of the world has been waiting to share with me. So I acknowledge you for taking that step out. There's a whole world waiting to meet you. Welcome.
Thank you so very much.
And Pastor Kev, Reverend
yes.
Kev, when Shirley was telling me and my wife was discussing that you had been mentored by Dr. Johnny Coleman and Les Brown, And I was telling them that my concept is Les has mentored thousands and thousands of people, but when I heard your tape, I realized that you had made the conversation your own. You see, a lot of people that I've heard, and I don't need to put anyone down, a lot of people get up and they try to imitate a Les Brown, right? And they sound like they're kind of parroting whoever their mentor was, like Jack Canfield and Les taught me a lot earlier in life. And a lot of people make the mistake of, oh, I'm going to be the next Jack Canfield. I'm going to be the next Les Brown. Instead of intending to be the next Reverend Kev.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the first Kevin Ross that I know of, you know. I'm sure there are others. However, imitation is a wonderful thing, but it's an initiate step. It's the first step at introducing new information. It's wonderful that people can be positively impressed by people in the world who are about something. Thank God that there are people in the world who young people say, you know, I want to be like that guy. And that's just step one. That's step one. It is utilizing the inspiration that we draw from the Les Browns of the world, the Dr. Johnny Coleman, Jack Canfield, and others, utilizing that inspiration to find your own voice. And I often say I am a bit of each person who has influenced my life. So there's a little bit of all of them somewhere in my message, somewhere in my walk in this world. I talked to Les just yesterday, and he continues to be a source of inspiration to me.
Once you've been touched by an inspiring person, they leave their fingerprints or their DNA on you, and you carry that with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
and it's called compound consciousness. It's when the two come together that the amplification of what happens when those two come together, as the scripture talks about, wherever two or three are gathered, there I will be in the midst. Well, what's in the midst is that unknown force that would not have shown up, the mystery that would not have shown up had your mind not wrapped its mind in agreement with someone else of like mind and perhaps even higher mind. And so it's a powerful thing that happens, and it does help you to walk in your own voice with power and authority.
You know, and as you say, as I was listening to what you were saying about having pieces of all of those and internalizing the pieces that helped put your inspiration together, you know, I think about the scripture where Jesus was allegedly quoted as saying, "The works that I do shall ye do, and greater works." And I look at that as a very, very motivational statement, and I also see that there are very few people in the world who have actually embraced that with the belief that it's really, really, really true.
Well, and that goes into somewhat of a theological conversation, your viewpoints about Jesus, you know, if Jesus as Savior, Jesus as... You can start breaking down all of the things that have been subscribed to Jesus as being. But there's another aspect that we often miss, and that is Jesus as teacher. And it is the purpose of the teacher to teach you to be like the teacher and to exceed the teacher. That's the whole purpose. That's the whole purpose of education. That's the whole purpose. You know, you don't send your kids to school to be a third grade consciousness to hold their whole lives.
Definitely.
You would hope that they take it and evolve it and take it to a whole new level to bring something into the world that was not here before. So the statement that he used is not something that should shock us and startle us. He was a master teacher as well. And if you were his student, you were expected, just like any other teacher would say, you were expected to do greater things because you're going to have access to what I gave you plus your further pursuits, you know, plus what I didn't get a chance to study and learn. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so, very few people embrace that because it causes them to have to take responsibility for their own lives. There's an old song of the church that says, "Shall Jesus bear the cross alone and all y'all go free?"
Mm-hmm.
No, there's a cross for everyone.
That's right.
There's a cross for thee. There's a cross for you. So the intention is, you know, no, each one of us gets to accept responsibility for doing the greater works, whatever that happens to be in your individualized expression.
And I love that word responsibility because the first time I ever met Jack Canfield, he was leading a conference called Personal Empowerment and Personal Responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's when everything changes for you because then you take responsibility for your life, you really, and this is maybe controversial for some to hear, but you really wake up to the awareness that there are no victims, only volunteers.
I believe that.
That's so true, and I think people would rather blame other people for where they are rather than look at the man in the mirror and take responsibility and get up and make the changes necessary to transform your life.
Yeah. And I'm not assuming that everyone knows how when we've reached the point that we are no longer satisfied with the way things are. And dissatisfaction alone can serve as a great motivator to get up and make some changes or do the research to find out, well, how can my life be transformed? How can it be different? How can it be better, richer, fuller, more stimulating, more celebrated?
How important is it to be imaginative? And is that the same as visualization? In other words, what you see is what you get?
Yes. Imagination is extremely important because it's a faculty that we all have, the ability to see beyond appearances. We have the ability to see with our eyes closed. That's another way of defining imagination, your ability to see with your eyes closed. Your imagination is what I like to put your nation of images. If you look at the two words, it's your world of pictures, and your life becomes a reflection of the world of pictures that are impressed within you. So if you have images in your mind about you being a worm of the dust, well, then people will mistreat you because worms get stepped on. If you have within your imagination images of you being prosperous and healthy and whole and free, then you begin to express this imaging law in your world and in your affairs. Worry, when people worry, they are also exercising their imagination. They are seeing unfavorable outcomes. They are seeing unfavorable outcomes. And so the imaging law simply outpictures for them what they have held in mind. So if you worry a lot, you are using your imagination to draw into your experiences things you do not wish to experience. That old statement, if you worry, why pray? If you pray, why worry? It's more than a cliche. It actually, you're actually using your faculty of imagination when you do this.
What a person imagines in their mind, whether consciously or unconsciously, they will manifest that in their lives.
Yes.
That's what they see for themselves.
God said to Abram, lift up now thine eyes and look from where you are, north and south and east and west, and all that you can see, I will give it to you. All that you can see, I will give it to you. But I won't give you anything you can't see first. Why should I? because you didn't have the courage to see it for yourself. But if you have the courage to see it, I'll give it to you. And that's really what the imaging law says. Visualization is a practice. It's taking that one step further to intentionally sit through a process of seeing specific things that you wish to be, do, and have. It's getting intentional about it. It's getting focused about it. It's getting clear about the things that you wish to experience. Remember, the mind sees in pictures. If I said to you right now, don't see a red dot, it's impossible for your mind not to have formed a picture of a red dot, right? Because the mind pictures. And so every time we introduce a word into our consciousness, it transforms as an image. So imagine all of the things that we are saying that are negative on a daily basis that are being recorded like film in our consciousness and then begins to play out in our experiences. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he.
Sandra, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I was listening and remembering in my mind that I can see everything that he is saying clearly as I, you know, take a view back into my life or things that I'm doing right now that might have I've seen in my vision. And then I have recognized them when they came back to me that I had concentrated on that specific thing, and I see that I had brought it back to my life. So it was a great life experience to see how I manifested it so that for my future visioning and contemplation, I know that I should concentrate on that which I desire, not what I did not desire.
Mm-hmm.
And it was evolutionary to see it.
Mm-hmm. The thing I feared the most came upon me.
Indeed.
The thing that I imagined the most came upon me. It's the same law. It's the same action. It's the same activity occurring. Job might have seen some more preferable outcome. But that which he saw, it manifested for him.
Yeah, he definitely became a magnet for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you had mentioned on one of your broadcasts that I listened to something to the effect of all of one thing or nothing. Nothing is big or small. It's just an illusion. Do you want to talk about that concept for a moment?
Yeah, you and I determine what's big and small, but it's all relative. You know, I think I was talking about being on the Oprah Winfrey Show and how, for some people, that's the biggest thing in the world and how many people would love to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show and how wonderful that would be, and I'm sure it would be just magnificent. And to some person, that's the least thing in their mind to see. It's nothing because it wouldn't even occur to them because it's not even in their mindset to call that big. What's big might be witnessing the birth of their child, okay? So we assign what's big and small. And because we assign value to things or give meaning to things, because that's where it has meaning, when I give it meaning. You know, if you were a criminal and you had gotten caught and Oprah invited you on her show, that may not be a big thing for you. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't want to go on the Oprah Winfrey Show so the whole world can know what I did wrong. So we assign meaning to things, and since we can assign meaning to things and use that ability to assign value, we to cause us to take action. See, that's the whole purpose of it. So if it motivates you to say, man, being on the Oprah Show is a big thing, great. But it's all one thing. It's all one thing. And the one thing is that when I move in the direction of my desire, when I apply this imaging law that we've discussed, when I began to change my mind around and change my mouth around, I changed my life around. You know, it's one thing. And we use things to, as the carrot, if you will, to bait us to take action toward becoming the person it takes to receive whatever it is that we're pursuing.
Reverend Burton, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I'm just really, really glad to be in the conversation because when I heard Brother Reverend Kev's tape, I immediately grabbed my notebook and started taking notes. And I'm a note taker, and I really was reminded of some things. Although I do seminars and I speak in motivational circles, it's always great to hear someone who has a powerful delivery. And so, Reverend Kev, I really appreciate what you're doing for the world, and I definitely give you kudos and wish you great, great, great success.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Every bit of encouragement helps.
And one other thing I'd like to add, when Les was in the House of Representatives, I was standing in his office his last day in the House, and he was kind enough to let me be the only person that was allowed to stay, right? As people were coming in and saying, "Oh, we really are going to miss you," and this sort of thing. And I saw people even in the early stages of him moving into that whole motivational thing. People were saying, "When you were a House of Representatives, you came to my house and you gave me money because someone had turned off my my electricity was turned off in the middle of winter." You know, and even in that situation, you know, he, in a political situation, he was still this giving, helping kind of person.
I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Shirley. I would like to know if Rev Kev is going to be in North Carolina, in the Raleigh-Durham area, at any time in the near future.
Thou sayest so.
Well, it is done.
I think the three of you can be instrumental in having that happen. I would love to come to the area and love to share. Right now, it's not on my schedule, but you certainly could be instrumental in having that happen.
And we will definitely work on that.
Okay, yeah, when we're not in the air, I can give you, the way to have that happen. But I would love to come there, possibly this year, depending on if we can work it out. But you see, we are finding each other because we're supposed to be finding each other at this time.
I concur.
There is a readiness. And so don't shrink back. You've moved to these new positions and in terms of your thinking and how you're interpreting things, and because that's what's next. You see, there was a time when you could come to someone and say, "Listen, if you can send a message across the world just by talking in this little thing here," imagine if people said, no, "I'm perfectly fine writing it down on a piece of paper and putting it in the mail." What if the world rejected the telephone?
Yes.
See, so we come to the point where there's a new technology that's available that will help us to advance ourselves, and it's just what's next. It's not speaking ill of those systems that have brought us to this point. We give thanks for those systems that have brought us to this point, and we can find ways to merge these worlds together. We don't have to discard everything, okay? But there's a synergy waiting to happen if we would allow ourselves to embrace what is beginning to really sweep this land like never before. You were always aware of it, but it has taken the rest of the world to shift to make it safe for most people to step out and say, "Well, all right then, fine, I'll admit it."
One of the things that I love about your show, listening to your show on Unity FM, is the stories that you tell are so fascinating and phenomenal. Now, you grew up in the movement. So
yeah.
The movement is in you. And we were talking earlier, that's quite a testimony to your parents as well. Now, I don't know if they were like Unity ministers or something, or I don't know.
They were not. They were people who took me to church every Sunday and insisted on, like most of your parents did, you know, and insisted that I pay attention. That's pretty much it. And insisted that I ate my vegetables and went to school and did all these other things. So it was very normal upbringing. What was abnormal about it is what I was being exposed to at an early age. The ideas that I was being exposed to, in first grade, you know, I'm in class with everybody else, and the teacher says, okay, I want you to, each one of you, to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourselves, starting here. And so it goes down the road and it gets to me. My name is Kevin Ross, and I'm a unique, unrepeatable miracle of God.
And
of course, look on that teacher's face. Exactly, exactly. I'm 6 years old at that time. So yes, of course. So it was my parents just, but that was every day for me. That was just the way it was. So this was my default kind of understanding of myself and of life. And so I held that same understanding for other people, because what you see is what you be. So I can't see anything less for you than what I see for myself. This is the way it was. So I'm very grateful to my parents, both my mother and father, for, you know, placing me in an environment, you know, where I could really thrive and grow up thinking in a way that would provide later to the world a message that would awaken each person to, you know, live lives of meaning, value, and purpose.
And I'm so grateful for that as well. You had some phenomenal experiences in your life utilizing what you've learned throughout the course of your life. Some of the stories that you tell, for instance, that conference, I believe, was in South Africa with Nelson Mandela. You know, just how the universe just worked together to bring all the right people along to make that happen for you. And you were there. You know, if I just see me there, I am there.
And because, like we were talking about earlier, giving yourself permission, Shirley's recounting a time when I wanted to go to South Africa to a conference where Mandela was speaking, and started out with no money, no prospects of it at all, and before it was all over, I was not only in South Africa, but in South Africa with a delegation of friends sponsored by the conference itself, and backstage shaking Mandela's hand, as well as on stage presenting Mandela with an award. And these stories are my experiment with teaching. You know, it's experimenting with what I've been taught.
What is possible?
Yeah, what's possible? You know, because I can be in the question of what's not possible and could have stayed at home and been right about that. I've been right at home about it, couldn't work, which is where most people are.
Now, did this take everyday 24/7 contemplation? Or you just put it in the universe, said it is done, and it was done?
Oh, no, this was more like the latter. You know, I saw a flyer saying, and in fact, this conference is about to happen again this December. It happens every 5 years. But I saw this flyer saying that, you know, President Mandela, the Dalai Lama, and all these great magnificent people going to be gathered in South Africa. I just graduated from college, and I looked at the former, and I simply said, I'm there. And I circled the dates on my calendar, and that started a chain reaction within the universe. because the universe is always agreeing with you in the desires of your heart. And as I teach, those desires were placed in you to be manifested. Those good desires of your heart are placed in you by the Father, or by the source of life, desire, De, which is from the Latin of, and Sire, the Father, or the source of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so these things that are placed within you are not things that you seem to lack, but they're things that are seeking to be born through you. And so there's a powerful agreement when one starts to step in the direction of his desire. You start to kick down the domino. The dominoes start to fall in line because that's just the way the universe is ordered.
You've had some phenomenal guests on your show, and when I spoke to you yesterday, I told you I was going to share a story that inspired me, and I was listening to the segment that you did with Stedman Graham.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to that at a time when I was going through a crucial point on my job that I had been on for 4 years. They were downsizing. The PI, that the principal investigator that I worked for, had accepted a position at another university, so my position was going to be phased out. It just so happened the day before I was called into that office, I listened to that segment. Stedman was talking about a situation with his niece who had just graduated from college, and she was out looking for a job, and he told her, stop begging for a job. You go in there like you own that job. That job is already yours. And that was just so encouraging and uplifting to me. I had an interview the next day. I went in there so confident, like that job was mine, and I really wanted the position. It was an excellent position. And to trust the interview, I just owned that job. And if I hadn't listened to that, I probably would have went in with the same mindset, please give me this job, and this is all the reasons why I'm qualified for the job. But I went in there so strong and confident in my ability, and that's what I projected. When I left that interview, they were offering me to come back a couple days later to interview with the vice president of the department, and I was still flowing in that energy. They invited me to come back to meet with the president of the department. By the end of the week, I had the job.
All right.
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.
That's what I'm talking about.
Excellent. Excellent.
It works if you work it.
That's right. Surely. You know, I'm working with people in that situation all the time, and one of my pet phrases is, the universe rewards inspiration, and it does not reward desperation.
Absolutely.
And one of the most phenomenal things about that whole experience is that the location where this job is someplace that I secretly wanted to be, and this, it is so beautiful and serene over there, and that was such a switch from being in a hospital setting to being over here in, like, the Garden of Eden. That's what it's like.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That's what I'm talking about. That's fantastic.
We have a couple of minutes left before the show is about to end, Reverend Kevin. And I'd like to give you a moment to talk about your teen dream camp.
Thanks for pointing that out. This same work that I'm doing with adults, I also do with teenagers through a camp that my wife and I founded several years ago. Teen Dream Camp is a not-for-profit organization. It's a 501c3 tax-exempt organization that allows us to work with teens in a loving, affirming environment to awaken, nurture, and develop the dreams in their hearts early in life. And we do this over a series of three different camps. Camp one is the Discovery Camp, where we support them with getting clear on the dreams in their hearts. And in an experiential environment, we support them with dreaming out loud. So we reverse the pressure that dreaming is, you know, foolish, and make those without dreams the outcast, if you will. Everybody's got to have a dream in Teen Dream Camp. Camp two is Manifestation Camp, where they come back to learn how to manifest the dreams in their heart. So we first awaken the dreams in their hearts, and then they come back for a second camp, and they learn how to manifest them. So we teach them principles for manifestation, and they can't complete the camp without manifesting. And then camp three is the leadership camp, where they come back as junior staff members and model those distinctions that they've learned in camp one and camp two, and then learn principles of leadership. So it's a phenomenal experience for teens. We did a camp just recently in Florida, and we can bring camps to your local area, provide 30 teens to provide for the camp. But you can get more information about Teen Dream Camp and see the documentary at www.teen, and that's T-E-E-N, like teenager, teendreamcamp.org, teendreamcamp.org, and you'll get all kinds of information there.
And we'll definitely be looking forward to checking out that site. And I'm going to give you the last few words. I'd like you to answer this question. If there were mandatory three keys or steps to take to redesign your life, what would they be from your perspective?
Desire it, design it, do it. Desire it, design it, and do it.
So we have three D's there.
There you go. Those would be the, if I had to narrow it down really quickly like that, that would be it. And first of all, Shirley, thanks for having me on your program. And just to have this conversation was wonderful, and it keeps me on point. As I said, I would love the opportunity to perhaps come to your area and do some work with you guys there, and I'm sure we can co-create something that's just exciting for the area. So let's explore those possibilities. And I'd like to leave your listeners with something that I have become known by. It's a poem that was written by a dear friend of mine, Eric Ovid Donaldson. And I'll leave you with this. It says, if when adversity should strike in your life, and you can look beyond the setbacks and strife, if neither sorrow nor grief can challenge your belief, and you can see the victory that lies in defeat and mistakes and errors you don't repeat, if you're willing to pursue your goals and your dreams, no matter how far in the distance they may seem, and you refuse to relent, no matter the trials and tribulations sent, if you can see all of the beauty that lies all around you, and you know that the love of God surrounds you, if you can love yourself and believe in yourself, then all of the things that you ever hope for and fight for and pray for shall be there for the taking. For your dreams, my friends, were always in the making.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And
yeah, thank you for your time.
Continue to excel on your journey, Reverend Kevin.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much, all of you, for listening, and my new friends in North Carolina.
Thank you.
It was our pleasure.
We'll be keeping in touch with you. Thank you so much. You have a blessed day. Bye-bye. Wow. Was that phenomenal?
Oh, it was. It was phenomenal. Very
well,
powerful.
Well, thank you, too, for joining me on the show today.
It was our pleasure.
I really appreciate your valuable input.
Yes.
It made the show all the more special today, having you two contribute to it.
Thank you. Thank you. Guillaume said thank you. He dropped, closed the line out. He said to say thank you as well, but that was really wonderful.
It really was, and we definitely have to get together and collaborate on getting him out here.
Oh,
no doubt about it.
God, yes.
By any means necessary. It's happening. It's already happening. We see that, right? That's going to do it for the show today. I certainly hope that you enjoyed listening to Reverend Ken and Kev and all the discussions that happened today on the show. If you want to contact Reverend Kevin Ross, you can go to his website at www.kevinrossspeaks.com, and then you can also listen to him. He has a weekly radio program on unity.fm. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am your host, Shirley, signing off, and thank you so much, Sandra.
Okay. Bye-bye.
If you want to contact Dr. William Burton, you can email him at knowersark1, and that's knowersark1 at yahoo.com. And the music that you're listening to is Dr. Burton. singing Subliminal Criminal off of his CD, 21 Days to a Happy New You. And keep those emails coming. You can email me at alwaysinthespirit@gmail.com. From our television. All about decisions flow from our television. That subliminal criminal that silences his schemes. His sermon is terminal, his targets your dreams. Got you floating in limbo, you've chosen to lean. But you don't let them know, if you know what I mean. The subliminal criminal will kill off his kids and fill them with chemicals for sales pyramid. He's so subliminal. He's such a criminal. Television is so subliminal. He's such a criminal. As the contents of our supermarket kill the mice in the labs of Nader's raiders. When we sit in judgment on one child's behavior, never knowing that what you eat is what you are by far, you see, we are all novelties, obviously. But why must we be for sale? I said, we are all novelties, obviously. But why must we be for sale? I said, we are all novelties, obviously. But need we be for sale? We are all novelties, obviously. But why must we be